Good afternoon and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host. Real Talk is the show about anything, anything that piques my curiosity and hopefully yours, dear listener. The subject we're going to be discussing today is one that was suggested to us by a listener here on Vashon Island, and it's one that touches approximately 20% of our population. It's what happens to the victims of childhood sexual abuse in their adult lives. And I am honored to have with us today Janice Palm. She is a therapist and executive director of Shepherd's Counseling Service, specializing in treating adults who were sexually abused as children. She's been doing this work for 20 years. Welcome, Janice. Can you hear us?
Yes, loud and clear. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Although the subject can be difficult, I think it's an important one. You are the one who told me that one in five adults has been a victim of childhood sexual abuse. Am I correct in that?
That's true. The statistics, as far as we know, are higher for women than for men. The average is one in six boys has been sexually abused, and one in more like seven girls has been sexually abused. So we kind of round that down a bit, and one in five, 20% of the population. And again, you know, a lot of this is guessing because this is not certainly, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, this was very much underreported. So it's a little hard to get accurate statistics on this.
So what was it that got you into this work in the first place 20 years ago?
You know, in my work as a therapist, very, very early in my career, actually, I realized that adults who have been sexually abused as children, that's really a sort of under-acknowledged and underserved group. I think it's maybe not so intuitive to think about the problems that those folks might have. I have a background in early childhood education, so I'm very well versed in developmental issues, and that coincided very well. There's a lot of development that gets interrupted when children are sexually abused. So, you know, overall, it's sort of my affinity, but also a passion to help people that maybe weren't getting helped in other ways.
I'm wondering too, has the definition of sexual abuse changed over the decades culturally? In other words, are there things that people did 50, 60 years ago with their kids, touching and so forth, that would now be defined as sexual abuse?
You know, that might be true, and it's interesting to think about. I don't know what got flagged as childhood sexual abuse 50 or 60 years ago. I do think there's such strong generational patterns to sexual abuse that maybe things that were just accepted as this is how we do it in our family and this is the norm for our family maybe did fly under the radar. I think with increased awareness and also maybe a culture that recognizes that this causes long-term harm, maybe we started to define that more specifically through the decades.
And what are the lasting effects of childhood sexual abuse in adults? What is that long-term harm?
You know, it's pretty profound, actually. The effects range from emotional disturbances, certainly into physical disturbances. That's an area that I think is really not understood. As well. I mean, the sort of broad strokes are a lot of times the effects are anxiety and depression are very, very common for adult survivors. There's a hypervigilance that takes place, a term that we use a lot that folks are familiar with, PTSD. PTSD, we don't often think of that in terms of adults who were traumatized as children, but that's very much applies. So there's a lot of hypervigilance, a lot of anxiety, and coping with life is very, very difficult. So depression is often something we see in adults. There tends to be a lot of ways, efforts to sort of get away from the pain, and that can look like self-harm. It can look like using drugs and alcohol to sort of try and get away from the shame and the guilt, which tend to carry on through the decades, honestly. People have issues with their bodies. They sort of can be sort of at war with their bodies. Their body is what, you know, was involved in the abuse. The physical effects have to do with chronic pain issues, migraine headaches, lots of gastrointestinal disturbances. Those are very, very common, muscle tension. And then sexual effects. One can imagine that being sexually abused, being sexualized early, is disruptive to developing a normal, healthy sexual life. And maybe, honestly, one of the most painful and profound effects has to do with relationships. It's very very hard to go out into the world and trust other people and form lasting, connected, close, trusting relationships when a relationship has been the cause of so much harm in your life.
Yeah, I can imagine it is. Describe the hypervigilance and the PTSD just a little bit more, because those are terms that may not be real clear to folks. How does hypervigilance and PTSD show up in someone who's been a victim of childhood sexual abuse? And is that different from a war survivor with PTSD?
It can be. So basically, our the emotional part of our brain is really there in large part to protect us. And so if something happens to me when I'm, well, at any point in my life, which is truly a trauma, it's I fear for my life, I fear for my safety, I can't handle what's going on for me, what happens is our brain will generalize that and say, basically, stay away from anything that's like that. So if I hear a sound or a smell that, and this is a word we hear often, triggers that memory of something that happened, excuse me, my brain is going to protect me. And my body, my nervous system is going to go into a state of, okay, where's the danger? And we talk about chronic PTSD in folks that have had trauma when they're children, because that comes to be how they navigate the world. The world is not a trustworthy place, so I need to be vigilant, and you know, hyper vigilant. That's the name of, and that's how we get that term. Mm-hmm. To be vigilant all the time, because I don't know when I'm safe, and I think how the effects might be different for maybe, you know, a war situation versus childhood is, you know, if I've had a pretty safe, sane, normal life, and I go off to war or battle, and certainly there's trauma that occurs there, that protection system is still going to work that way. But I've also got other experiences in my life that have told me that I can be safe and life is okay. If something happens, and especially which we know happens in homes, that children are sexually abused in the home that they're raised in, well, I've got to be on guard all the time. So you end up with a sort of chronic state of sort of being aware and watchful to try and find out if I'm safe, basically.
What sort of physical effects does that sort of constant anxiety or hypervigilance have? Is it going to cause people to have difficulty with blood pressure, with heart?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, in a word. That's a great question, and that's one of the things that, you know, as we get more advanced in what we can find out about how the body works and all that, our body is meant, our nervous system is meant to protect us. So if there's a danger, my nervous system has this whole pattern that it goes into, and part of that is releasing these chemicals these hormones that really activate me, adrenaline and cortisol, and give me lots of energy. People, you know, we've heard lots of stories. Folks can do things in a time of crisis that physically and stamina-wise that they couldn't do other times. So that's because we've got these chemicals that are just blasting through our system to get us out of danger. The trouble is that when the danger doesn't go away or I don't know that I'm safe, those chemicals, those hormones are working all the time, and there's no release. And so those chemicals are very powerful. They're supposed to energize us, but we're not supposed to keep our foot on the accelerator all the time because it wears out every system in the body. And that cortisol probably is the main culprit for why it is that people decades later end up with extreme, you know, muscle fatigue, joint pain, migraines, you know, the parts of our body that are supposed to respond when we're in danger. Our GI tract is supposed to, you know, alert us that there's danger. Well, when that's happening all the time, these systems wear out, and yeah, it has an enormous physical effect.
That sounds devastating. One of the things you mentioned when we were prepping for this show is that the effects of childhood sexual abuse tend to exacerbate or get worse with age. How does that show up?
Yeah, I think, you know, and we hear this, and I think that people who have something horrible and really awful and shameful happen to them in childhood want to outgrow it, want it to be something that happened to them a long time ago. And, you know, maybe as a society we kind of cross our fingers and wish that were true. Pretty much the opposite happens. Life gets more complex as we get older. Mm-hmm. So I have to navigate more. I have to figure out if I'm going to get an education, if I believe in myself and trust myself enough to go out and take a risk to, you know, take a new job that might be a little bit of a reach for me. And certainly in relationship, we have, you know, lots of complexity as we get older. There's expectations when I enter into an adult relationship that I'm going to show up emotionally, that I'm going to be able to allow someone in, I'm going to let myself be vulnerable. A whole host of things are required of us as adults that we're really not prepared for if it's been about sort of keeping your head down and just trying to get through the days. So the effects compound. It gets to be, that's a lot where we see the anxiety sort of manifest, and also depression can really sit in because it's just simply hard to live a life. The complexities of being a parent, for example, if your own child has been unsafe, that can be very, very triggering for anxiety. It can even bring up memories that weren't, had been sort of held in unconscious when a child reaches the age where we were sexually abused, for example. Very, very triggering. So there's a lot of ways that life doesn't get easier. It actually gets harder.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that this system that has been abused is weakened and perhaps even inhibited from certainly normal development, but even reaching for those things that are required of an adult in this culture. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, very much so. Kids, you know, we want kids to have a childhood where they're safe enough and have enough support that they can go out and try new things, even if they fail, and gain confidence in themselves for things they do well. Well, if I really have been so hampered by shame and maybe not the support that I need, I'm not taking those risks, so I'm not exploring that. It's really about safety, and that doesn't promote growth.
You're listening to Real Talk on KVSH 101.9 FM, Vashon Island, Washington. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, and I'm talking with Janice Palm from Shepherd's Counseling Service. She is an expert in treating adults who've experienced childhood sexual abuse. We can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon for their community information support. here on The Voice of Vashon. Janice, we've talked about the impacts of childhood sexual abuse on the adult. How do you treat this syndrome, for lack of a better term? Is that the right term? Is it a syndrome?
You know, it's not a bad term. It's really a sort of difficult human condition is what it is. It's a dynamic. How to treat it is, you know, the first words that come up for me around that are honestly with respect and tenderness. There's a lot of complexity to this. I think a great deal of understanding and really education is necessary to be able to thoughtfully and thoroughly help folks who have been struggling with the effects of childhood sexual abuse. It has a lot to do, sort of maybe logically, with the relationship. So, you know, sexual abuse is a violation of relationship. What I thought I could trust, what I thought was safe from another human being, whether that's a child who's older than me or, you know, a coach or a family member. When my body is violated that way, now I don't know who I can trust. And so finding a place, finding help that's trustworthy and safe is a huge part of healing from sexual abuse. We're finding out more and more neurobiologically how human beings really need other human beings to exist in this world, but we certainly know that the human connection is healing. And so taking the time to be able to establish a relationship with, you know, a therapist, for example, that gets it and can form a safe, trusting relationship, that's really that's the foundation. I think, you know, being able to go through and tell your story and actually say out loud what happened is enormously healing in the context of safety. So, you know, since time began, human beings have been making sense of their world by telling stories. Well, children who are sexually abused don't tell that story. And so having a safe place to really talk that out is very helpful.
It sounds as though you're almost rebuilding a personality from the foundation, as you suggested. How hopeful is the prognosis for folks, adults, who've experienced sexual abuse in childhood?
You know, it's very, very hopeful, and I think that's one thing. Boy, if there's anything I'd love for people to understand, it's that this is not a death sentence, an emotional death sentence. I can't tell you how many people I've had come into therapy that say, as adults, that say, I thought I was going to have to live with this for the rest of my life. I didn't think there was anything that could be done. Because it just feels so overwhelming to folks. And that's why Shepherd's Counseling Services exists, because we want people to know that there's this place that understands how this goes and understands what happens, and that healing is possible. You know, I don't know that we would or honestly could keep doing this work if we didn't see how it is that people through, you know, a long, difficult process, to be honest, mm-hmm. but that they really do find themselves, they do find their vitality that has been lost and covered over with shame. It's a pretty, pretty uplifting, hopeful process, honestly.
Well, that's encouraging. And yeah. I want to talk more about Shepherd's Counseling System closer to the close of our show. But one question came to mind, and that is, you said kids don't talk about it. Kids don't report it. Why is that?
This is really an important thing to understand. Kids don't talk about it for a few main reasons. One is that they're overwhelmed. it's hard to sort of wrap your head around this, I think, in some ways. But by the definition of trauma, that means that my system is overwhelmed. That means that I'm basically, for all intents and purposes, in a shock state. So when our brain does a great job of protecting us when we're overwhelmed, it keeps us from having access to our memory. Often it keeps the important parts of our, you know, body going, our organs, but we don't have access to words. If you talk to someone, adult or child, mm-hmm. Right after a trauma, they won't be able to explain it in sentences, and they might not even have words to talk about it. Yeah. So when children are traumatized, they don't have words. They're in a state of shock, so they're not likely to be able to talk about it. Sometimes kids don't have the words to talk about it. They don't have the words for body parts because it's also strange and new and scary for them. So that's probably, I think that's a piece that gets lost. Traumatized children can't report for the most part. I think, you know, children are afraid. A lot of times they're explicitly threatened, don't tell. A lot of times they don't need to be explicitly threatened. They understand that they're not supposed to talk about this thing because it feels very shameful to mm-hmm. them what's happening, and very mm-hmm. confusing. And it might also feel good, mm-hmm. honestly, the mm-hmm. attention or the arousal. Mm-hmm. And that makes it even more confusing. But kids and adults, honestly, don't generally go talking about things that they're afraid about or feel like they've done something wrong. Children always blame themselves for the sexual abuse, so they feel like it's their fault, and they don't talk about it. Those are probably the two main reasons that kids don't talk about it. And sometimes when kids talk about it, they're not believed. It's hard to imagine that, but it's very true.
So how can the adults who are working with kids watch out for it? What should they be looking for, and who are the adults that are required to report a suspicion of sexual abuse?
I'll do those questions in sort of reverse order.
Okay.
Anybody who is comes in direct contact with children through a professional capacity is a mandated reporter. So certainly therapists, counselors, you know, teachers, health professionals. But, you know, we've tried to say, okay, we've got to have some system of accountability here. If you suspect or have a reason to believe that a child is in harm's way in any way, we're required to report that. The signs aren't always very explicit. Generally, rule of thumb for kids is things that are going wrong, not going well in a child's life, will show up in their behavior. That's very true for younger children. It is also true for adolescents, maybe not quite so much. So changes in behavior is something that we look for, and those are pretty dramatic changes in behavior. If a child let's say a child was going along just fine and all of a sudden they become, you know, you can tell in their behavior they're a lot more anxious. Hmm. If you have a kid that's outgoing and all of a sudden they are really preferring to stay in their room doing very quiet things, ordering their toys, rearranging over and over again, getting very particular about their circumstances, those would be changes in behavior. Another thing we look for, and again, this is more true in younger children, is regressive behaviors. That's a common way children signal when something's wrong. I mean, and these behaviors cross over. It's not exclusive to sexual abuse,
yeah.
But children who, you know, were well and thoroughly potty trained, for example, all of a sudden are having accidents left and right,
yeah.
Thumb sucking, really sort of regressive, seeking safety behaviors is one way. certainly if they're acting out sexually, and, you know, a huge red flag again is if kids are exhibiting sexual behaviors or sexual curiosity or have words about sexual things that go above and beyond where they are developmentally. You got to really, really, really ask yourself what's appropriate for this level of development. Why is my child mimicking that? Why are they acting out sexually? Oftentimes, children and adolescents will withdraw, just pull inside themselves. And then another key is, which is sort of be under the category of behavior, is they're going to be acting out. They might have lots of anger outbursts, just big emotional outbursts, and or really keeping to themselves. All of a sudden you've got the child that's just fastidious about being too good, mm-hmm. and that kind of wasn't their nature before. Those are all red flags. In older kids and adolescents, a lot of that crosses over, but we're going to maybe, because they have more access, might see more drug and alcohol use and abuse, self-injury, self-harm. They've got more agency to act out sexually. They might be letting their personal hygiene go. They just don't care about themselves. They might be, could be tremendous weight gain or weight loss and effort to sort of have some control over their body. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, are any of these things or all of these things that can crop up in a kind of normal development cycle? Yes. But if you stand back and look at the big picture, in really watching a child, you'll probably have a gut sense that something's off.
So you indicated before we started this conversation that the statistics are improving in younger generations now. The statistics for childhood sexual abuse are diminishing or reducing. To what do you attribute that?
You know, they are. They seem to be, and that's fantastically good news. The latest number I've heard is 1 in 10, which is a big difference than 1 in 5, right?
Yeah,
So what we want, this is the direction we want to go, but I have to say 1 in 10? I mean, think about that.
That's still a lot.
Right?
Yeah.
Think of a classroom of 30 kids.
Mm-hmm.
By golly. I don't think there's a consensus on why this is changing. I think it's, you know, like with most things, it's sort of a combination. I think one thing that's definitely changing is there is change in the culture. We are more willing, we've got a long ways to go, but I think we're more willing to sort of acknowledge this does happen and don't look the other way. I think there are a lot of organizational plans in place. I know, you know, teachers and coaches and church workers often need to go through a training program before they can work with kids. Even volunteers in schools a lot mm-hmm. of times will need to go through that to say, okay, this is real, so here's what to watch for, and here's, you know, here's your guidelines, and here's what to watch for in kids. So we've upped we've raised the bar on, you know, sort of vigilance and watching and acknowledging that it exists. I think along with that, we've given kids maybe a little more agency to be able to speak up. Although, again, efforts that really rely on kids keeping themselves safe, that's pretty misguided. There, I don't know that there is a child out there, ever has been or will be, a child that's any match for the wiles of a perpetrator.
Of course.
Yeah, it's really up to adults.
Janice Palm of Shepherd's Counseling Service, I want to thank you so much. We are just about out of time. So in this last minute, can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with Shepherd's Counseling Service if they need counseling themselves, or whom they should call if they want to report suspicion of childhood sexual abuse?
If you have any suspicion, and in here I say trust your gut for adults, if you suspect that a child's in harm's way, call 911. Or you can call Child Protective Services. Either way, the call will get routed, but reach out for professional help. Err on the side of caution, for sure. And I think that's, you know, something we all understand. We'd rather check out something and find out that, oops, there's no basis for it than to sort of miss something.
Right,
so
right.
Reach out. As far as Shepherd's Counseling Services, our web address is shepherdstherapy.org. If you Google Shepherd's Counseling Services, you'll definitely find us. That's probably the way most people find us. And there's a lot of information on our website. And, you know, if you suspect that someone in your life, or you know that someone in your life or someone in your family has a history of sexual abuse, there's three words that are really important, and those are, I believe you. To believe someone, to let them know that you understand, and maybe let them know that there are places that specialize in helping folks who've struggled with sexual abuse. It's very reassuring for folks to find out that, you know, when they come here to a place like this, we know why they're here. They know why they're here.
Everything's open.
We know what we're doing.
Yes.
So it's pretty reassuring to find out that there's a place that just is dedicated to helping.
Thank you, Janice Palm of Shepherd's Counseling Service in Seattle. We've been discussing the impacts of childhood sexual abuse on adults. This is Real Talk on Voice of Vashon at KVSH 101.9 FM, Vashon Island, Washington. We're here every Tuesday at noon to satisfy your curiosity, dear listener. Send your suggestions for Real Talk topics to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. Thanks for listening.